Good morning.
Yeah, man, the whole Dorner thing is like it's a crazy story. I mean, it on both sides of the story, it's scumbags on both sides.
Yes, police and
Dorner alike,
scumbags and everybody. At least he didn't kill any innocent.
No, that was the police.
Any other police people or any non-police people? Right, as far as I know,
I don't recall that Dorner killed. I think he did kill
hijacked
someone.
He stole a car
from
a Boy Scout leader.
It just happened to be a Boy Scout
leader.
Who
said, I don't want to hurt you, but I need your car.
Yeah.
And then he went out driving around police in broad daylight, and all of a sudden he's dead 4 hours later.
Right.
That seemed really odd.
Yeah.
So I was thinking he like ran out of food and needed to go buy some food. You know,
well, you know,
serial killers get hungry too,
Mike. In between
Mike.
Killing people, yeah. You need
you know how it is.
Grab a Snickers. Hey guys, welcome to episode 032 of the Skinny Podcast with Mike and Adam. How you doing, man?
I am doing well. My house is under construction, so if you guys hear some banging, it's just my new roof being put on because the rock roof is dead!
Yay!
Hooray!
Long live metal roof.
Shingle roof. Needless to say, I have had a rock roof on my house for the past 50-something years.
Because that's fashionable.
I know.
Yeah.
But it's gone now. Thanks, in part, with the ongoing saga of my dad.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Is he still in this room, by the way?
He's still in the room.
We should probably thank him.
He was nice enough to leave me a little bit of an inheritance, I guess. Needless to say, and it came at the exact right time.
And now, figuratively, he'll be hanging over you now.
Yes.
Aw.
So you'll be hearing banging in fours
because
they're like boom, 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 boom.
Lots of nail guns too.
Yes, so sorry about that.
So I'll try to edit America out as much background noise as you can, but please bear with us. I don't know how prevalent it is in the sound right now, but whatever. We should go ahead and jump into
start
the feeds. We got a lot of show today. All right, so last week we talked about the Grammys, and we just basically just went over the nominees and the performers and stuff. So we basically just want to go over some of the big name winners of the people I guess we were rooting for.
We weren't really rooting
for a lot of people.
No, there was only one band in there, I think.
Yeah. So a record of the year went to Somebody That I Used to Know by Gautier.
Mike, you didn't have to cut me out.
I think you didn't
have to stoop so low.
Oh, I think that happened. And
I feel like a stranger, and I don't know the rest of it.
I just kind of mumbled through it. All right, so Adam,
record of the year, which means it was just apparently the most famous song of the year,
or it sold the most. It was the single that sold the most.
When we think of 2012, I think we'll think of that song, and we'll never think of Gautier again.
Also, Sigh.
Or Psy, who didn't get nominated.
Well,
he got
not,
passed over.
Yeah, I don't think he's part of the RIAA. Or
no? I don't know.
Okay, whatever.
I didn't do any research on it.
So, Song of the Year. This makes Adam very happy because it's no. We Are Young by Fun.
Biggest
period.
Disappointment of 2012 was the band Fun, who won both Best New Artist and Song of the Year, which I always have felt is the most legitimate category.
Yeah, explain why.
Because it goes directly to the songwriter, as opposed to Record of the Year, who goes to everybody involved with the song.
Yeah.
So back in the days when Celine Dion used to win lots of Grammys, Record of the Year went to Celine Dion, but she didn't write any of her songs. So, it would get passed over for Song of the Year because it
most
sucked.
Most pop singers don't.
And, you know, would go to, you know, Rob Thomas, who wrote Smooth.
Yes.
And and Santana won Record of the Year, but Rob Thomas, the real genius, won Song of the Year, the most legitimate category. So unfortunately, Fun featuring Janelle Monáe?
I've never heard the whole song, so I don't have no idea who Janelle
Monáe
is.
I apparently haven't either.
Yeah.
I heard it once when I was driving to Alberto's on K-Rock.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, crap, this band made it onto K-Rock. They're going to be around for
a while.
That's
not even a rock song.
I know.
But anyway, so moving on, I think I see Adele won Best Pop Solo Performance of the Year.
For Set Fire to the Rain Live.
Yeah, so, and also Gotye won Best Pop Duo?
Duo slash group performance.
Yeah,
because
awesome.
Gotye is actually a group.
He is.
Not a solo artist.
That is not his name, people. I don't know who his name, what his name is.
Their name.
Their name, yes. It's like you wouldn't call Bo Boken Bless the Fall, right?
I would not. I would call him a dreamy, dreamy man.
I get lost in his eyes. And moving on, there's so many categories.
Kelly Clarkson
to go to.
Won something.
Yeah, and also our man Sonny Moore won Best Dance Album again.
Best Dance Recording.
Yeah, and Best Dance Album.
And, yes.
So both for Bangarang.
Go Sonny Moore.
Bangarang.
Mind the light, well.
And Adam, who won Album of the Year? Speaking of Album of the Year,
my number 9 disappointment / number 10 honor of the year.
Yes, right.
Went to Babel by the band Mumford and Sons.
Yay! And I think out of all of the nominees, I think me personally, I think they would have the most legitimacy to win. Yeah,
I think
so.
So
good
the
for them.
Only legitimate.
And they wrote their own. They wrote their own music. They wrote their own songs. So
that's
true.
Very minimalist.
Well,
I can't say the
well
same
given.
About the Black Keys, who won for rock performance.
I wouldn't even consider the Black Keys a rock band.
Best hard rock went to Hailstorm. Did you end up looking them up?
I did not.
Because I'm pretty sure I heard them on Jimmy Fallon at one point, and they were just a chick-led like metal band.
Well, it's good that the best hard rock winner was a band that came from this decade.
Oh my God, that's true. And Lamb of God, that dude's still in jail, right?
He's
out on bail.
He's out on bail now,
okay,
but he's his trial. Didn't you? You didn't listen.
It's
last
good when
show.
You can kill somebody but still get out of jail on bail.
Rodney Radke.
That's true, but there was a whole other country where these people get away.
They still don't know if he's guilty or not.
So the Black Keys won Best Rock Song, Best Rock Album, and then the alternative stuff I've never heard of.
Yeah, so we went through all of that stuff last week, and it's too much to get through. Most of it we don't really care about, but congratulations to Mumford & Sons. It's a band I really like a lot.
Yes.
And I hope to
look
hear...
Look forward to their third album, which will hopefully be better than Babel, in my opinion.
Yeah. Nothing. It can't top their first album. But hey, anyway, so moving on in the feed... Hey, Adam, I want to pose a hypothetical question to you.
Please do.
Let's say there's a restaurant, right? It's a very popular restaurant.
Olive Garden?
An Olive Garden.
Okay.
We call it Olive Garden. Okay. But you find out that a lot of the chefs and the waiters at that Olive Garden like to molest little boys.
Oh, like at Olive Garden.
Like at Olive Garden.
Yes.
Just like Olive Garden. But anyway, so the let's say the owner of this Olive Garden, he knows all about this, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't do shit about it.
No.
In fact... The only thing that he would do about it is just kind of brush it off. At the most, transfer those chefs and waiters to other Olive Gardens, right?
There you go.
Where they can go ahead and molest other people. Would you call that a good and inept owner?
Well, it depends if he's molesting children or just molesting pasta.
let's say little children.
Okay. No, I would have to say that is a poor... administrative decision.
Very, very much so. But so hypothetically, that's bad organization with bad leadership.
Very true.
All right.
But if Olive Garden had been around for over 2,000 years, you never know. I mean, it's like a world institution.
Exactly.
That can't go away.
Which is
overnight.
The only reason why Olive Garden is so popular, because it's been around so long, and people don't know how to eat at other restaurants.
Nope.
Other restaurants that that maybe serve you reason and logic,
right?
Instead of a shitty pasta. But anyway, hey, Joey Ratz is going to resign as Pope Benedict the
16th.
He's going to be citing poor health.
Poor health. So he might be dead soon.
Yeah, but most other popes die with the hat on.
They do.
Yeah.
Even John Paul II, with his Parkinson's, Easter, Jesus, molest children not. And then he died.
Yes.
And without Benedict getting into that form, I don't even understand how you can be a pope without having Parkinson's, because I got so used to Pope John Paul II.
It's mandatory, I think.
Yeah, because he was sick for years and years. And that was all I thought.
He was basically just a walking corpse before he died. Yeah.
Right. So, and I didn't even realize how old Pope Benedict is now, because he was old when he started in 2005.
Yeah.
And he was like 78.
But then. He still looked like a Bond villain then. And he looks like a, and he's a former Nazi. Nobody really everyone keeps forgetting that.
So was everybody who lived in Germany in the 30s. I don't think I think you had to be a Nazi no matter what.
Not everybody who lived in Germany during World War II was a Nazi.
It's kind of like saying, you know, if you lived in Russia in the 80s, like, okay, yes, I was part of the communist Russian party, but not really by choice.
That's by politics. Yeah, yeah.
It's because they forced me to and would burn me in an oven if I didn't.
So so long, Pope. You know, you're probably like one of a rotten human being. You know, you and your organization are responsible for the spread of AIDS in rural countries in Africa.
Yay.
The molestation and degradation of little children across the world.
If the Book of Mormon has taught us anything, it is that. Sorry, you haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yet.
I'm just throwing that out there again.
Yeah.
That was how they were spreading AIDS.
Yes.
Raping children.
How else are you going to spread AIDS?
But the Mormons helped.
Yes.
To civilize them.
Of course. Because you got to.
Anyway.
So do you have any thoughts on this Pope leaving?
No. I wonder if they'll bring in a young Pope next.
A young hip Pope.
A young hip Pope who probably...
He's in his mid-20s.
Yeah. One from this century, maybe.
Come on, guys. Catholics is punk. We should bring Avril Lavigne. Avril Lavigne should be the next Pope. Punk is fun, yo.
Punk Pope. Pope punk.
Jesus is punk. But anyway... That happened.
Moving on.
Yeah, they're already in the process of trying to select another one.
Look out for the white smoke.
Yeah, it is 2013, right?
I know.
Even the Vatican should have a cell phone at least.
You would think, but no, you got to go with white smoke because that symbolizes something.
Yeah, it's dumb. Speaking of dumb, in my opinion, at least. Hey, our good man Snoop Lion is going to be writing a children's book. Isn't that nice?
I think that's great. He has children. He has grandchildren probably at this point. I don't know.
Great grandchildren, just like
probably
Lil Jon and Lil Wayne, my favorite rapper ever. But did you know that children's book is going to be about the awesomeness of weed?
I did not know that.
Yeah, man.
But why? That's what I want to know.
All right, well, according to this article from the BuzzFeed.com, Snoop Dogg, Snoop Lion, explains in his recent GQ profile, "It's not that I would ever push weed on our kids, but if they wanted to, I would love to show them how, the right way, so that they won't get nothing put in their shit, or overdose, or trying some shit that ain't clean." And I'm pretty sure that means you want to smoke this... weed, right?
As kids? You want to smoke this reefer, right, y'all?
When I was 9, like the one thing that I worried about is whether or not my pot was clean or if I ain't going to get no overdose or some shit.
And you never know, because if you growing up in a house where your parents are smoking weed, you might be entitled to try a little bit of weed when you reach the ripe old age of 8 or 9. And you might want to make sure that weed is okay. Only get it from a trusted friend or relative. Not crazy Uncle Johnny, though.
Johnny, you don't want to get the weed from Johnny.
Not crazy Uncle Johnny. He don't know what he's smoking. He's smoking that PCP, y'all.
And he does heroin.
He does a little bit of heroin on side. You want to make sure that's green, that it smells good. You're going to know what heroin smells like.
So Snoop Lion goes on to saying he's thinking of reading, you know, to 8 and 9-year-olds of his Pee-wee football team that he coaches. Believe it or not, he says, they need to know. The book is about a little girl whose parents teach her about the awesomeness of weed. That is a quote. "This is a joint," her father tells her. "It's made of marijuana. It's a surprisingly long book, and if you read it in marijuana times, it takes like 8 years." And that's a marijuana joke.
I was going to say, if it's a children's book, we could always read it on the podcast.
We should.
One day.
We should probably, whenever it comes out, we'll probably, hopefully, we can follow
we'll
up.
We'll look into that.
Yeah. Yes. So what are your thoughts on this? I mean,
it's almost like
as someone who's
saying
as
we
someone
should,
who's done weed. I've never done weed.
That's true.
That's right.
It's almost like giving condoms to teenagers. It's like, you know, they're going to have sex anyway, so they might as well have a condom. So you know an 8 or 9 year old is going to smoke weed anyway. So you might as well make sure he's smoking weed right.
Yeah, and you don't get no overdose or trying some shit that ain't clean.
Exactly. And in Snoop Dogg's world, every 8 and 9 year old is smoking weed. He doesn't even realize that there's 8 and 9 year olds out there that don't smoke weed.
Exactly. There's 8 or 9 year olds who just want to draw Spider-Man and play Super Nintendo like me.
Exactly. And why not get high doing that? I think it's a good idea.
I would have had a better childhood about 8 or 9.
Your childhood would have been the biz-om.
Biz-om. I'm sorry. I've never smoked weed. I don't know what biz-om.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's a
is that a weed word?
A metamorphosis of words of the bomb.
Okay.
And the Izza, which Snoop Dogg brought into the vernacular somewhere around circa 2000 to 2001.
The RZA and the Jizza?
And the Jizza and the Nizza and the.
And the Ghostface Killer?
Jizzy Crizzy.
We are the least fizzle cool crizzle people in the world.
We need more weed in our life, I think.
That's probably a topic for another time about, you know, talking to, about, you know, kids and marijuana. Because personally, I don't think marijuana is a harmful substance. But, I mean, smoking anything into your lungs, I can't imagine is good. Whether it's tobacco, whether it's hookah, whether it's marijuana. I can't imagine putting anything in your lungs other than good old O2 is, you right. know. So maybe that's a topic for another day.
I inhaled a piece of a crab wonton. yesterday, and I felt that was not a good thing to have in my lungs either.
You ain't going to go overdose or get some ink clean.
That wonton
right?
may have been laced with heroin. I don't know.
See, we need Snoop Dogg to let us know that these things are okay.
I know.
So
write a children's book.
Speaking of you know, us being way uncool, speaking of some other people who are way uncool, the Backstreet Boys. They're actually going to have
a documentary,
tell-all documentary.
It's about time.
Directed by Stephen Kijak, which I'm not familiar with at all. He's not a filmmaker I'm familiar with. But that might be coming in the near future. The Backstreet Boys just gave them the go-ahead to do that.
And remember back in the summer when Mike was all excited about the Backstreet Boys reuniting and that it was going to take over the world again. And as I can tell,
excited is the correct
it's everywhere. I saw them on Jimmy Fallon performing a Christmas song. That was just awful. I was like, Santa Claus is coming to town. And it was...
Wasn't it an original
awful.
Song?
It might have been original, yeah. I think. But AJ was so into it. He's like, bring your presents for the kids, yeah. And they
God,
all were just a little bit
so
older
much.
And a little bit fatter. And it was just all bad.
This is like the Backstreet Boys' dads. Coming back, y'all.
I don't know why we need streets, a documentary y'all. On it. At least it's a documentary and not like a actors playing. It's not like a real movie kind of thing.
That'd probably be worse. Much worse.
Remember when Brian Liddell got heart surgery? We didn't know how to handle it, y'all.
Yeah, but like, where's the conflict in like this documentary?
They created their
they got
own
famous.
Conflict.
So some douchebag got 5 strangers who never met before, except, you know, 2 of them are cousins. But the like, put them in a room together. Hey, you guys are a band. You're going to sing these songs that were written for you,
right?
And now you're famous.
And now you're famous.
Where's the conflict in that?
Well, they created their own conflict out of the nothingness, because that's what douchebags do. Remember?
That's right.
When douchebags are happy, they create conflict.
Okay.
So that's what happened. That's why Aaron Carter and Nick Carter had their own spin-off reality show where they had conflict, and then one of their sisters died at some point. I forgot why.
Okay.
And yeah, I never watched the show, and then they broke up for a while, and then they got back together.
Yes, and we reported on that. Breaking news, man.
And don't forget about that hit song that they had called The Call, My Battery is Low.
Oh, God.
Trying to tell you don't worry. Trying to tell you I'm sorry.
My battery is low. Let me go.
Refer back to podcast number
whatever
2.3.
Don't listen to us. Don't watch the documentary, no matter how drama filled it's going to be.
Don't do it.
But a little bit of advice to my man Adam here. He actually needs to learn how to stop stalking Miss Allison Hannigan, because she has obtained a restraining order for a stalker.
My God.
Adam, can you walk us through this article,
okay,
please?
John Hobbs. I told John he's got to cut back a little. John and I met on a redheadfetish.com website / how I met your mother /
discussion
forum. I'm sorry, dot bang Allison Hannigan
okay.
dot gov. We met on there, And he was just going on and on, like, I need to kill her, I need to rape her, I need to, like, live with her in heaven kind of stuff. And I was like, John, ooh, calm down, dude. You want to go, you want to not have that kind of anger. And, you know, he opened up a website called Bang Murder Kill AllisonHannigan.com.
Okay.
I visited it once. It wasn't my cup of tea.
Holy
so
shit.
So I went back.
What is that? Is that like a some sort of weird fucking blog or what?
It was just him just blogging about killing her.
Holy fuck.
So I chose not to participate in that. I told him he needs help. I told him, you know, get some therapy, get on some meds. And so I wasn't surprised when when he got a restraining order against him.
Why can't people as an expert sucker myself, why can't people like you and John Hobbs just masturbate in her bushes like a fucking normal stalker, man?
I am.
Currently.
Currently. He went too far.
He did.
I know where to draw the line.
That is way too... Any form of stalking is way too far, but John Hobbs, you're a fucking mental case, man.
And he has kids on top of all this.
Oh, wonderful.
So
wonderful.
Future stalkers...
So way to set a good example for your children. Yeah,
I know. So, you know, I started my, you know, just bang and treat respectfully.
Yes.
Go back to your wife. .com of AllisonHannigan.com.
We'll have the link below.
And I think that's a very much more legitimate way to approach your fetishes.
Question. You married a redhead band geek.
I did.
Why are you stalking a redheaded band geek? You like what you like, I guess.
I want to be surrounded by redheaded band geeks at all times.
you won't rest until you have them all.
And, you know, Allison Hannigan, she makes millions of dollars. So
right.
She could raise my baby.
She can support you, man.
That would be fine with me.
Family units.
My redheaded band geek doesn't bring home $1 million an episode on How I Met Your Mother.
She doesn't bring home that TBS money.
Or that it's not TBS, it's WGN America.
WGN.
And FX.
All right. Well, you know, you just make sure you never get caught, just like me.
I am
unseen so far since 2006.
Okay. Can I ask who you are currently unseen by?
Who aren't I? I'm just so good. Anne Hathaway, Miss Mila Kunis, Natalie
Portman. Emmy Rossum and Anne Hathaway.
Emmy Rossum, that's right.
It's like you can't tell the difference.
They're
Emmy Rossum
both
and
fucking
Hathaway.
Beautiful and talented.
And show their boobs.
Show their tits every chance
I've
they get.
I've watched the first two episodes of Shameless.
Holy
now.
Shit! Of season one?
Yes.
So many tits, right?
So far, I've only seen one.
Of Emmys.
Yes.
Right. That kitchen, that
yes.
kitchen scene, yeah.
And
it's a fucking amazing scene, by the way.
Still struggling to find why anybody would like the show, but I've only
it's
two episodes
show.
In.
It's
so
a good show.
I'm going to give it a chance.
Yeah.
But at this point, two episodes in, it's just sad.
It's pretty depressing. But that's the whole point of the show, though. I think we're going off topic. But
I'm sorry. I wanted to talk to you about that.
Yeah. This is a topic for another day.
I enjoyed the boobs.
Lots of tits,
the
man.
Boob.
Lots of tits and drug use and alcohol use.
And that poor bathroom.
I know.
God, everything happens in that bathroom.
In the intro.
They have sex on the sink. They take a dump.
Emmy Rossum takes a piss without cleaning
the
herself.
The kid brushed his teeth in the toilet.
That's right.
The baby.
The little African-American child.
It's starting to get more and more depressing the more I watch. So
yeah,
like,
that's the point of the show. That's the whole point of the show. It takes like downtrodden folks and just kind of, you know, it kind of like exaggerates their life for you. You know, it's an interesting show.
I think Allison Hannigan should be on there.
Absolutely. She should
boob.
Be on every show.
Why
especially
not?
Shows with tits. Speaking of the tits, we're going to be talking about Conventional Weapons, which is the new album.
Let's do it.
By My Chemical Romance, a band that I've been following since 2003, 2004.
And I've been following since 2010.
10, yes. You've heard about them, though, since like 2004. You just weren't interested until you joined Mike's band.
Right.
Yeah.
They were a band that I always thought I should listen to them in 2004 and 5, but I just didn't because they were too lame.
Because of the scene.
Emo.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And they wore eye makeup.
Is it because of the way they presented themselves?
I think that was the main thing.
The whole character thing?
Like, the you know, at that time, three cheers for Sweet Revenge.
Yeah, spit it out.
And he just, like, did his whole red eye thing, and then all the girls at the shows, the big fat emo girls, they did the red eyes thing. It just didn't look good at all. And then the Black Parade came out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, do you want to tell your retrospective of Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge because you actually lived it?
Oh, yeah, I did. Well, so before we move on, we're going to talk a bit about the band, and then we're going to go ahead and move on to like a dual review of Conventional Weapons because you may have, I'm sure you've heard at least one of the past 5 months one episode of the past 5 months. We're constantly talking about Conventional Weapons and the band. That album was what they recorded before they ended up recording their latest album, Danger Days, The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys. And they scrapped this one because they decided it didn't push the envelope enough.
Black Parade came out in 06.
Right.
Danger Days came out in 2010.
That's right.
And they recorded this in 2009.
That's right.
Like, it was supposed to be their follow-up to the Black Parade, which was, like, the biggest album for them.
Correct, yes.
And of any of that scene.
Yeah. So, like I said, you know, they released this in, you know, two songs apiece. They finally released the last bit of it like a couple weeks ago, so we have the whole album now.
Yes, all 10 songs.
All 10 songs of it. So we're going to review that later, but before that, we can go ahead and talk a little bit about My Chemical Romance. I'm sure you guys have heard of them. They're pretty mainstream, you know? They're pretty mainstream.
Much. You may have, I would say so.
If you're not familiar with the band, I'm sure you're familiar with their songs like I'm Not Okay, Na Na Na, Sing, because they've actually performed on American Idol. They've sold Sing to Glee, I think.
Yes.
So more than likely you've heard of their songs, but
they sold a lot of things from Danger Days to a lot of things.
Unfortunately,
them and it will say like, you know, the sellout category was where they sold their songs to everything. And I was
right.
So anyway,
we'll get to Danger Days. So they started back in 2001.
September 11th, 2001.
Yeah. They didn't start, but Gerard Way was on his way to like an animation. The lead singer, he was on his way to like an animation gig because he wanted to be an animator. So, but he was in a taxi cab in New York, and he saw the planes hit the Twin Towers, and he eventually saw the Twin Towers fall. And something clicked in his mind, like, what am I doing? I need to start a band.
Wasn't he working for like the Cartoon Network?
Yeah, he was gonna apply because he was gonna pitch them a show.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was on his way
and
to an interview.
I'm not gonna do this drawing thing. I need to form a band.
Yes. Important stuff.
And maybe when you're living in New York you took account of your life and said, I should do something in my life that I want to do rather than what I have to do.
From what I've heard in you know, his interviews, he did sound like he didn't really like doing it very much. He's very talented. He has a comic book that he writes and illustrates called The Umbrella Academy.
And he obviously had enough connections in the industry to make this work.
Exactly.
Who just forms a band and like 2 years later you're like, oh, we got our first major album. We're on a major label. Well, not a major label at first, I don't think.
No, it was on Eyeball Records, which was started by Jeff Reakley of Thursday.
Of Thursday.
And who produced the My Chemical Romance's first album?
So he already
Jeff
had
Jeff Reakley.
Yes. Yeah. And so he already had some famous friends.
Yeah, so he was good friends with Jeff Reakley from before. We got activity going on in the roof here.
Sorry, the roof. I just saw him like go down to one knee. I was like, whoa, he almost fell.
Gonna have an injury.
Okay.
Here. So yeah. Anyway, they started up. We got Gerard Way, lead singer. We got Mikey Way, his brother, on bass. We got
he's a beautiful man, by the way.
He is very handsome. We got Ray Toro on guitar. We got that other kid on guitar. I can't remember his name right now.
Frank
Iero. That's right.
Yes.
And
the dude with the big Jufro.
No, Ray Toro is the Jufro guy. Frank Iero is that emo kid, little vampire kid.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they've had like a cycle of drummers over there.
Well, Bill Breyer.
Yes.
Was their drummer all the way up until Danger Days. He's the drummer on Conventional Weapons as well.
No, Bill.
Yes.
No, Bob Breyer, you mean? No,
yeah.
Let me tell you this. They had another drummer. I can't remember his name. He was the drummer for their first album, I Brought You Your Bullets, You Brought Me My Love, and he recorded the drums in the studio for Three Cheers. Right before that album went out, he left the band, and then they got Bob Breyer.
Ah, okay.
So Bob Breyer recorded... the Black Parade and Conventional Weapons before he left the band.
Because he didn't like Danger Days.
I guess so.
That's what I'm guessing.
Well, their official announcement was like, oh, you know, separate lives, blah, blah, blah.
He's going to go start his dubstep career. Yeah. Like they all do.
Look out, Skrillex. Bob Fryer from My Chem.
So he had a lot of famous friends.
And it worked out great because, I mean,
A lot of talented people around him.
It wasn't just the connections. They were legitimately a good band. And if you see live footage of them performing their old songs, they got a lot of energy. They
back
got a
when
lot.
He was fatter.
Yeah. And he was an alcoholic back then, too.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. Okay.
And he used to be a little fat kid.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a little kid, that's for sure. Is, the dude's like 5'4" or 5'5" probably. Yeah. Seeing him stand next to Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Fallon towering over
him. Jimmy Fallon being like 9'3".
Yeah. Yeah, Jimmy Fallon's just a normal sized guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so there was I Brought You My Bullets, You Brought Me My Love.
Which is a moderately well for
and I liked that album. Yeah. I went back and listened to it this week for the first time in over a year probably. And I really liked that album a lot.
It's a good album.
It's a very
it has
good
a lot
intro
of
album. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's not like perfectly produced and sounded. And
yeah, you can definitely tell it was on an indie label, on an indie budget. But they did really well with what they had. So they ran off of that success. Warner Brothers was interested. They got the attention of Warner Brothers. And just like that, they were signed to a major label. And then Warner Brothers put them in the studio with a really famous producer who also did the Seosin album. He did like All American Rejects, Green Day. He's done like all these famous rock bands. So they stuck him with, I can't remember his name or not, but
it's not Rob Cavallo, is it?
No, he did Black Parade. He's pretty notorious for being like really like demanding, and he comes to the studio like wearing like pajamas and like a hockey jersey and. I can't remember his name.
Okay.
I'll probably have to look it up.
I've heard Rick Rubin does a similar thing, too.
Yeah.
And Rick Rubin just lays on the couch and listens to the music. And says, sounds good. Let's record.
Yeah. So that album turned out to be Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge, which is their breakout
catapulted
album.
Catapulted them to superstardom.
And I would have to say, out of all of their... we're going to count it as four albums now. But
yes.
No, four, one, two, three, four, five albums now, technically.
Yes.
Yeah, so out of the five albums, I'm going to say Three Cheers is still my favorite.
I think so, too.
It's got that energy. It's got the talent. It's got the raw passion. It's got good subject matter.
I can still listen to I'm Not Okay in the context of that album.
Yes.
I can't listen to it on the radio where shit, it still sounds like a terrible song.
Yeah, and it has, of course, I'm Not Okay, which you've heard us say this many, many times. It's a terrible song outside of the album.
And then after the first half of the album and you get past all the singles.
Yeah.
Then, like, the meat of the album, in my opinion, from tracks 7 through 13.
Yeah.
Or 14.
Like, my favorite song is Cemetery Drive, which is the second to last song.
Yes.
Fucking amazing song.
Hang 'em High is my favorite song of, like, all of their entire catalog. So, and that's like, the one right before that song, I think.
Hang 'em High, isn't that, like, right after Helena?
No, it's towards the end. It's right after...
Oh, that's the one that like starts off like with the whistling, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a fucking good song.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then the last song on the album.
It ends it perfectly, really, too. I think that's that album from start to finish is a masterpiece. I'm Not Okay is a weird song outside of it, it's still a masterpiece from start to finish, and I absolutely adore that album. I think that band was their peak. So, you know,
I wish I would have listened to it, you know, 5 years earlier as opposed to waiting. I'm like, I'm holding out on you, Mike Hem.
A lot of people didn't give them a chance simply because of their image.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had that weird, you know, like they had that weird theatrical thing to their.
There's a lot of theatricalness going on.
And speaking of theatrical, Black Parade.
Then Black Parade
came out.
Black Parade came out. And there was so much like even build up to that album. I was looking on Wikipedia and there's a picture of the day that they announced when the album was going to come out. And like all these guys in
these
black
druids,
robes looking like monks in front of the record company building or something.
They were in front of a concert hall where they were going to perform somewhere like overseas, like in Europe or something. And so all the audience is there, right? They're about ready to see My Chemical Romance.
Yes.
The banner's there. It says My Chemical Romance is about to play. There's an announcer that goes over there. I'm sorry, folks. My Chemical Romance will not be playing tonight, but I present to you the Black Parade.
Yes, that's what it was.
Fuck, is that too douchey?
Well, looking back,
and then Gerard Way comes out looking like Slim Shady.
And and he is like they completely changed their entire image, and it's almost exactly what the Used said that they were trying to avoid. Because when they say like, oh yeah, our label wanted us to like all dress in leather.
Because they're in the same label too.
Yeah. And they were like, let's, and I think My Chemical Romance did that. And that's mm-hmm. why they had their little breakup.
That's probably, like, maybe.
They went full on, let's do a concept album. And the user's yeah. like, no, we're just going to make a bunch of crappy music. Whatever we want to do. Which in a way, I wish that My Chemical Romance kind of did that. But whatever.
It worked out great for
them. It worked out for them success-wise.
Yeah.
So, but it's like, and then after that, it's how do you top that?
True.
Because the Black Parade, Mike.
Was financially their best album.
Of course.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the
multi-platinum
the video premiere on, I think it was VH1 or somewhere.
Something like that.
And I was just like, this is a lot interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think I was just in that time, that mindset of like, yes, death. I like it. 2006 was a death-filled year for me.
I think Welcome to the Black Parade is a wonderful music video. It perfectly captures what the song is about, and it perfectly captures like the feel of the whole album, I think.
Yes, which is apparently, from what I read, like it starts off with a death, and then it's just a journey to the
afterlife.
And it's
a celebration to death, and a celebration through afterlife, and then something about teenagers.
Why not? They scare the living shit out of me.
Yeah. You put the gun to your head, and then you're dead. I don't know.
That was the other song.
That's right. Sorry. Oh, so Black Parade, where do you stand on that album?
After I listened to it again this week, I do agree with you that the first half is better than the second half.
Yeah, as soon as you, like, after I Don't Love You, the album starts to take a little dip in the quality and then rise back up right after Teenagers.
I don't like Teenagers, and I don't particularly care for that song that you mentioned. And there's another song.
I Don't Love You?
Yeah. That song kind of drags to me a little bit.
That's my favorite song on the album.
Something about the House of Wolves.
Oh, yeah. That's a good song.
I like that song a lot. And I like Mama. I know you hate that song.
I don't like that song at all.
But I like that song. I don't know why.
I think the Liza Minnelli cameo is kind of cool.
Seems weird. And
it's out of place. I mean, like, to think that they paid her probably like $3 million to sing like 8 words.
Right. It's so weird that I like it for some reason. I don't know why. I just can't place why I like it.
Do you just like it because of how
it's so just not, it is? It's not them, but it's like still a good song. It's like it could have been a song by a completely other band.
But it wasn't written by Mike Chem. It was written by the Black Parade. Ah, you see what I did there? Fuck you.
Thank you. And then I like Famous Last Words.
That's a good, it's a
that
good
is
closer.
A good song. I don't like the chorus of it, but I like the first, which is weird. I do that with songs sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
Disenchanted is a good song too. The one right before Famous Last Words. It starts off. That's not how it is.
Damn it!
I'm sorry. I hate when we do that. We just like stop the show.
So it's a hit and miss album with me, but a lot. It's probably a 75% to 80% album for me for sure.
Okay, so yeah, the band toured on that for a really long time.
God, it was probably like 2 or 3 years, and they were probably
all over the place.
I can't imagine them wearing their Black Parade outfits and singing "I'm Not Okay."
Yeah, yeah.
Like I kept on trying to think of that.
I've seen it. I've seen the live footage. You know, they sing. You know, they did other stuff like that. But yeah. It's weird seeing their band camp thing.
Yeah, and to dress up in makeup every night. I mean, you guys aren't Kiss. Like just be a good rock band, like you know you are.
You know, I think there is still a place even today for a theatrical kind of band, and as long as you don't do it, I think.
They were the only band doing that.
Yeah, true.
At the time, especially.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's where I almost gave them worse time because of that.
Yeah.
I was like, the music is good, but the whole theatrical thing, I'm like, no, I'm
I
not,
think,
this band's
I think
not for
Mike
me.
Kim, like, walks that line where it's like, it's just enough or, like, too douchey. I think they just walk that line perfectly.
So then by the time I listened to it and I was like, okay, these three albums are like good.
Yes.
So now the fourth album is going to be great.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So then we hear, after they've been touring extensively, they've taken a little bit of break. They take like 6 months break or something because, they have families now.
Yeah.
They got
they're all
kids.
Older than me. You got to remember that.
Yeah. And then so we start seeing interviews from, different band members like, oh, yeah, this next album is going to be, return to rock music. And, we miss being a rock band.
Yes.
So that's what Conventional Weapons.
Yes. And they're like, okay, we decided that we don't want to be just a rock band.
We don't want to be a rock band anymore. Fuck everything I just said.
So we came up with a whole other theme of this post-apocalyptic California you know, 2019, the and sun has crashed into the earth kind of thing.
And it sounds good on paper.
Right.
But then you hear the song, Na Na Na, and I don't know what to fucking think.
No. Yeah, I know I didn't like it.
You didn't like it at first?
I didn't like that song at all.
I liked it at first, but I'm starting to not like it. I think it's just too dumbed down.
Yeah, for sure. It's not a good song.
It sounds like that's the song that the label forced them to write.
And it's supposed to, that song's supposed to tie in with something with the theme from what everything I was reading.
Apparently, they wrote that song during the conventional weapons days, and that was one of the only songs that they kept, and they built on. That song like bridged from conventional weapons to Killjoys, according to what I've read.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can kind of sense it, like when I was listening to conventional weapons, and I'm like, okay, they came up with these songs. But then they were probably also coming up with all of the songs that became what was Danger Days.
Right.
And just like, you know how with a band, you get really... you make a lot of songs and you're just like, okay, but then you have these old ones when you've made all these new ones.
Yes.
And you just stop liking the older ones as
I guess
much.
So.
Even though like everybody else in the world might like the older ones
But here's
more.
The thing though, they didn't write Danger Days and Conventional Weapons the same day. They wrote Conventional Weapons
first,
and then they listened to it and they're like, fuck, it's not good enough. And then they wrote something that wasn't good at all, in my opinion. There's a lot of people that still like Danger Days.
When I listened to it, I mean, there's 15 tracks on there.
That's way too long.
I gave it like a 4 out of 15.
Yeah.
There's like 4 songs in there. I'm like, yeah, this is pretty good.
What songs are they? Do you know?
I like The Kids from Yesterday, but I realize that I like it because it sounds like The Killers. And like new Killers, the Killers stuff that I like. So I was just like, yeah, they're trying too hard. And there's some references to the Killers in Danger Days.
Is there?
From what I was reading, because like the character of Jenny, which written on
Jenny, wants to get back home.
Yeah, and then like that's making reference back to Jenny Was a Friend of Mine, which was the first track on Hot Fuss by the Killers.
Cool.
So there's a little crossover there, and there's other little
things. I think they toured
things.
Together during the Black Parade tours.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. So for me, Danger Days is kind of forgettable. It's not my cup of tea, but it's not that I don't like their new sound. It's just it sounds so forced, and it sounds... I think that's right when they crossed their line of like, too much, and it's too douchey now.
It's too big.
Yeah.
And the when you read everything that they were trying to do with Danger Days was to say, fuck all of us being famous.
Right.
Like, they wanted to...
We don't want to be famous. We don't want to write good music.
Like, we don't want to... Like, we've entered that realm of famousness that we don't like... We're not happy that we're famous.
Okay.
I don't know. I was really trying to wrap my head around everything.
Don't bite the hand that feeds, Mike.
Yeah.
Right.
I was really, really trying my hardest to
figure
it out. Oh,
shit. We're under attack.
He's just cleaning
out our
gutters.
All right. So that brings us to conventional weapons. And just like I said, we reported on the show, and they announced that, you know, it's time for these songs to be released. And so they must have been listening to it again. Like, you know what? These are great songs. We should release them. So let's go ahead and jump into our review of them. Adam, why don't you go first, as you are a resident music reviewer.
And it was one of the two albums I listened to this week.
Yeah.
Well, I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I really, especially the first 6 tracks.
Yes.
I was just like, yes, great. Tracks 7 and 8, didn't care for as much. 9 and 10, we're fine. We're great. So I got a full on 8 out of 10. And it was, okay, in 2003-ish, Pearl Jam released an album of B-sides and rarities, like an entire 26-song double album kind of thing.
And Red Hot Chili Peppers is doing that still. And I think
I've been meaning
to
ask you about that.
Yeah, I think I read that. It's going to end at like July of this year.
Wow.
Fuck. That's too many.
And so and listening to the B-sides and rarities, it was spanning their entire catalog.
Mm-hmm.
So they had songs that they recorded back when they first started in 1991, 92. And Pearl Jam's sound changed between 1996 and 1998. There's a very distinct
like
style of change.
A really polarizing little record then.
Yes. Yeah. So when you hear stuff 96 and prior, it sounds a certain way.
Yeah.
And everything after that sounds a certain way. And I felt the same way about Conventional Weapons.
Okay.
Like, okay, it's almost like you're going back to the good My Chemical Romance stuff again. There's no theme. It's just like, let's get together and jam and write some good songs.
Which is fine. They don't have to go to a studio with some weird story in their mind. Looks like the last two records.
But after the Black Parade, it's like you have to have a story in their minds.
Or whatever. I think they've boxed themselves into this little corner, and they can't get out now.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Okay. Yeah.
So because I was listening to all these songs, and they were great, but I'm like, there's no theme.
Where's Jenny? I need Jenny.
I know. And there was a reference in track, I think it was 7 or 8, one of the ones I didn't like as much, that the line was from Na Na Na.
Yeah, that was the bridge, and we talked about that when I think we had a feed topic on that. Yeah, the bridge on one of the songs ended up being the bridge on Na Na Na.
Yes.
Everybody wants to change the world.
Yes, because I remember hearing that line in Na Na Na, and I was like, this sounds familiar. Is this from a different My Chemical Romance song, or is this from Conventional Weapons? So that was interesting to hear.
And I'm right there with you. I think the first 6 songs are fantastic, but I don't see a label as big as Warner Brothers, which is what they're on.
Yeah.
I don't see a label looking at those songs and being like, we don't have a hit here. We don't have a single.
Which I'm surprised about because I don't know.
So it kind of makes me wonder like if the decision to scrap the record was not completely up to them.
Yeah, because none of those songs could have been sold to American Idol.
Right, yeah.
You know? Or all of the marketing.
I think maybe like The World Is Ugly or The Light Behind Your Eyes. They could have did that on like American Idol, but
that's true. But it's all about
it's still
like,
not a catchy song.
It's about death when like singing is so much more like sing it for the world,
sing it for the world.
Yeah, that's like that is like a
yeah. That's something
know, like,
that
grab a Coke and you know
yeah. That's something that American Idol watchers
wanted, yes.
will like yeah. And I'm right there with you. Track 7 and 8, not feeling it. So what, Make Room. Exclamation point.
And Kiss the Ring or something?
And Kiss the Ring, yeah. Those are not very good. And
not
then,
so much.
And then the album ends with a Burn Bright and Surrender to the Night. Not a very strong
ending. The
other
ending. Way around.
No, Burn Bright and Surrender. Oh, yeah, you're right. This is mixed up here. IPhone.
I thought Burn Bright was a great closer for those 10 songs. And Surrender to the Night was not
when
that
compared
bad.
To their older works, I mean, even Conventional Weapon, I mean, even Danger Days ended on a note. It was a low note, but
the Vampire Money song.
Yeah.
You
okay, Mikey?
That was funny.
All
you
right,
know, they wrote that song as a FU to the Twilight saga.
Is that right?
Because they were asked to do a song for Twilight.
Oh, is that right?
And they denied it, but they wrote that song to, I guess, put on Danger
Vampire
Days.
Money.
Yeah, and that so that's sense. All it was. Is like we could have made all this money by doing a Twilight song, but we were like, no, thanks.
I Burn Bright as the closer for Conventional Weapons. It had potential. I don't think they reached the potential. I think they just kind of scrapped it.
Yeah. And I didn't have a lot of expectations going into this album at all. Where coming out of Black Parade, my expectations would have been like, it's got to be the greatest album ever.
Right.
I'm like, oh, it's okay.
So it's kind of good that we kind of came off of Danger Days because then now we're kind of almost blown away.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost a great record. Yeah.
Almost. 8 out of 10, in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm right there with you, Aiden.
It's really tough for these bands who, you know, in my opinion, shoot their wad on their first, you know, couple of albums. And it's like, I got no place else to go from
here.
That's
kind of the problem. I think it's just a record industry thing. Because, like, once you're that successful and you're on a label like Warner Brothers, they're just going to expect in a year, like, hey, get back in the studio, make us a hit. Make us sell 2 million copies.
And I could just totally see them writing and recording all 10 of these songs and probably more, and then they kept on writing and recording, and then the theme kind of came out of that,
because
they had you know 15 more songs
that
they were like, well, we can probably turn these 15 songs into a concept album.
From what I've read and all the interviews I've read, that they recorded maybe 12 songs. And 10 of them ended up being Conventional Weapons. Maybe 2 of them ended up being on Danger Days, and I think that's Sing and Na Na Na.
Mm-hmm.
And then Na 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 is going to be the bridge. Mm-hmm. They rewrote it for
I just think
Danger
that's
Days.
The cool thing about being in a band is that you just keep on making a ton of songs, and then you're like, oh, look, we got 40 songs. Let's just choose the ones we like the most, make an album. I'll change the lyrics around so that there's some sort of theme.
Unfortunately, they're a little bit stuck in the old way of doing music. So, I mean, like, it's great for bands nowadays.
It was in a very kind of David Bowie, Queen-ish sort of concept record kind of thing,
exactly.
Which, you know, we're not there anymore.
So My Chemical Romance is also set to be another album this year.
In this year? 2013?
Yeah, 2013. Cool. So are you looking forward to that?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. Technically, we're going off of Danger Days, not conventional weapons. So
that's true.
Yeah. So,
but we're also going off.
You have any expectations?
No.
No.
I think that they're a good band, and
you think they lost their they lost their spark?
Nah.
You think they still have potential to have make another big album?
I think so.
Yeah. All right. Great.
If they don't let themselves get too pretentious, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. That's one of my problems with this band is that they're. Like I said, they're boxed into a corner, and they did it to themselves.
And it's just, if you don't play characters, you don't set us up for failure. Because when I read that they had all like gotten these alter ego names for Danger Day, I was like, they did that? Like the Cobra Kid and Jedi Mind Trick and, and Frosty the Lemonade Stand Vendor? I don't know.
Hey, Mikey!
And one of the songs is called like Cobra Kid Killed Jet Li or something like that.
That's one of the sketches or something. Yeah.
Cobra Kid and the defying Demento. I don't know.
That they could have scrapped that whole thing.
Probably.
They could have kept the intro, but then they had like two or three more in there. They could have scrapped that thing. That album's way too long anyway. So
yeah.
8 out of 10 conventional weapons. We definitely recommend it for you guys, especially.
I wanted to recommend it to the 16-year-old I saw come out of Market Broiler, who was wearing her My Chemical Romance sweater. Like, have you heard the new album? I enjoyed it so much. Yeah. And she'd probably be like, I don't like it. Or I haven't heard it yet.
And we have a podcast. You should probably listen to our podcast. Exactly. And you guys should share our podcast too, because we're going to go into our sound off now. All right, guys, sounding off the end of this episode, Adam has another album review he wants to get to. But before that, I just want to share with you guys, I before the podcast, I actually used to blog a lot, probably, you know, maybe once every 2 weeks or so, I don't know, something like that. But I haven't done it in a while just because I, you know, felt like I verbally blog now in the podcast. But yeah,
it's a verbal blog.
Yeah, but to run the risk of, you know, boring my poor BFF here to death, I probably just, you know,
it's just your delusional paranoid rants about what's going on in the world.
Pretty much, yeah. It's just that, and also my top 9 favorite Disney princesses.
Perfect.
Yeah, there you go. So I just wanted to
break from the mundane.
Yeah, so I just wanted to share that with you and have a link down below. Check it out. It's just I'm ranking them based on personality and I guess how good of a role model they are to the kids.
I haven't read it yet, unfortunately. Yeah.
It's a light read. It's not a terribly long blog. It's a lot of. You got some of the artwork there that I also drew also, so maybe you guys want to check that out. So
Mike's artwork is incredible.
Oh, thank you.
They're all hanging up in his Dungeness layer around his beautiful women. Now he has a beautiful drawn women as well.
And the hanging slabs of meat a la Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So, Adam, you have another album that you want to review
being
today.
Valentine's week as it was.
Did you enjoy your Valentine's Day, by the way?
I did.
Good.
I had a delicious sandwich at a restaurant.
Yay!
With my wife.
How romantic.
So being that it is Valentine's week and I promoted my review of Bullet for My Valentine
this week.
And I thought it was great that the album art was just two giant bloody hands. And it was just very ironic in that way. And it made me realize like they should release an album every Valentine's Day.
Yeah, yeah.
Filled with angry, angst-filled rants about
I fucking hate love.
Yeah, and I mean, the more this is Bullet for My Valentine's fourth album. First one since 2010. The last one was called
Seems
Fever.
Seems like it's been their sixth.
No, it's their fourth.
Yeah.
Fourth full length. They have an EP thrown in.
Oh, okay.
But that doesn't really count, I guess. So, you know, I forget the name of the lead singer, but he's still venting his rage against all of the women who have done him wrong in his life.
Let it go, man.
And it's like, I realize that being in a band called Bullet for My Valentine, you can't write songs about anything else.
They're just like My Chem now.
Besides that.
They're just like My Chem. They've sang themselves into a corner.
I know. But needless to say, they are still really good, most of them. His lyrics, you know,
are just as childish.
I can't say that they're great writing.
Okay.
But the way that he sings said lyrics is good.
And for the people who don't know, Bullet for My Valentine is from Wales, right?
They're from England somewhere.
Yeah, I think they're from Wales.
And all their publicity photos, they look like they just crawled out of a dumpster and said, like, hello, fucking world, I'm dirty.
A dumpster in 1996, by the
way. Yes, probably. So, like, they just look awful. Like, the rock life has not been good to them. They looked a lot more, like, alive and like, they had taken a shower in the last year. On their previous album.
Yeah.
So, again, this is why I don't like looking at image. I just like to base it purely on the
music.
Keep
it in your imagination.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
So it's good. It's anger felt. You know, there's some balladish kind of stuff, but like, you know, good ballads, not sappy ballads. So that kind of helps. But it's all kind of the same pretentious stuff. Yeah.
No evolution. Just kind of they're writing what they're comfortable with.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. They did Tears Don't Cry Part 2, which one of their most famous songs.
Yeah,
was
that's from
Tears
their
Don't Cry
EP.
From their first. Well, it was on their EP, but it was also on their first full length.
Okay. Did they re-record it, or is this they just copied and pasted?
It's a copy and paste, okay. I think. As far as I know, it was from the EP to their first full length. So now they did Tears Don't Cry Part 2, a la Metallica,
ooh,
The Unforgiven Part 2, and Part 3.
Or The Guillotine Part 1, 2, and 3.
From Escape the
terrible
Fate.
Band Escape the Fate.
But the only good songs by Escape the
Fate. Unfortunately.
So this one sounds too much like the original. It's different, but it's the same. So it's like, it's still good, but it sounds like another band copying Bullet for My Valentine. And it's all just
it's
like...
It's Bullet for My Valentine covering Bullet
this
for My
is
Valentine.
Like the sad part of the breakup.
No.
There's the angry part of the breakup. There's the I fucking hate you part of the breakup. There's the I'm so sad that we broke up part of the breakup. And... it just kind of...
Dude.
The album is all back and forth with that
kind
of stuff.
Go meet another woman. It's fine. Write
so,
other... You can write a real Valentine's Day album one day. Who knows?
But then, like I said, it's still fun to listen to.
Yeah,
nonetheless.
Cool.
And yeah, I rocked it out.
Got a score for it?
No, I didn't get to do a score. I probably would have to give it...
Overall, the favorable?
Overall favorable.
Cool.
Probably in the 7 out of 11...
Okay.
Realm.
That's good. That's a decent score.
I actually think it might have been higher than that because I think Tears Don't Fall was the only one I was really like, no, it's just too much like the original that it just doesn't seem to count.
What would you say is your favorite Bullet for My Valentine album?
Oh, Scream, Aim, Fire.
Scream, Aim,
without
Fire.
Without a doubt.
That's number two, right?
That's number two.
Okay.
That is a really good album. Not to say that their first full length, which I can never remember the name of.
I can't remember either. I know like the image is like a cartoon image. Like the guy and the girl are backs to each other and they're kind of like doing, I don't know, they're probably going to do like some standoff.
I don't think you're right about any of that. So I'm going to look it up real quick.
I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure that their album art is like animated.
We are waiting. It's called The Poison.
Ah, see? The EP is Hand of Blood.
Yes.
Which you don't have the album art of.
No.
And that's the one where they're
and I
backs
can't
to
get
each
it
other.
To come up on my iTunes for some reason.
Stupid iTunes.
So this was The Poison, which is an incredible album as well. But Scream, Aim, Fire is their second album from 2008, which is one of my favorites, in my opinion. And it has the bonus tracks. If you can get the bonus tracks, I recommend it. Because the bonus tracks are all really good, too. And yeah,
awesome.
Check it out, and then make your reviews because they're definitely not as good as the first two albums, but it's still good enough.
Okay, good. So you're still going to be looking forward to their future releases then?
Of course.
Awesome,
of
man.
Course.
Well, thank you.
Anytime I can hear albums from bands I know.
Yeah, we got a lot of albums to get through this year
too. Still have so much.
Yeah. So thank you, Adam, for your review, and thank you guys so much for checking out our show this week. Please join us again next week, and we will once again cut through the fat of the news stories of the week. From my friend Adam, I am your co-host Mike, and we are still under attack, I think.
Is the DirecTV guy left yet?
I don't know. I know his truck's still there. That is not good. So you're going to live without TV like a Neanderthal.
Crap.
All right, man. Well, thanks for joining us. Please join us again next week.
Love you all.